has been, oh, these are low education, low skills people, so they don't know what they're talking about. They're just paranoid. You know, they saw something, they misinterpreted it, they don't know. And that's what keeps happening. These are people that have been in this movement for some of them for 40 years now, right? They know what's going on.
That was part one of Exposed, the human radiation experiments at Hunter's Point, from our friends at San Francisco Public Press. Part two is next week, so please tune in to find out why the Navy conducted human radiation experiments in the first place. And that does it for today's show. If you'd like more information, please visit us online at focmedia.org. I'm Salima Hamarani. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
And this coming Thursday on Words and Pictures, we're talking Democracy Under Siege with filmmaker Laura Nix and political cartoonist Ann Telness. Ann Telness recently quit her job at The Washington Post after her cartoon showing billionaires bowing down to Trump was spiked by the paper. She's the star of a new documentary by Laura Nix, the filmmaker behind The Yes Men Are Revolting. So tune in for a special hour-long Words and Pictures this Thursday, February 13th, from 11 a.m. till noon on your community radio station, KBOO.
KBOO, every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Queery.
Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
She's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Queery, every third Saturday at 10 p.m.
The things we could do, oh, it takes my breath away.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control, think I follow home.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today, we've got three guests. We have Laura Nitti, Phoenix Blickley, and Amanda Bowman Mejia. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, let's start by just having you introduce yourself, what your job is as an educator, and where you work.
My name's Phoenix. I am a school nurse. I work in Portland.
Welcome.
Thanks.
And I'm Laura. I help connect community college students to community-based resources.
Great.
My name is Amanda. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm a school social worker in Centennial School District in East County.
Great. Thanks, all three of you, for being on today. And then we always also like to ask, do any of you hold any positions within your union?
I am co-president of my local.
And then I'm Laura. I'm an area rep, which is our form of building reps.
Yes.
I'm Amanda, and I'm the union secretary for Centennial Education Association, and I'm also on the bargaining team.
Great.
Great. Well, we invited you on the show to talk about your efforts to get your local and now it's state union to engage in efforts to stop the genocide happening in Palestine. Would you start by talking about what pulled you into the fight for Palestinian liberation?
This is Amanda. For me, growing up in the American school system, I didn't know about Palestine. I was really ignorant because I wasn't taught in our public school system. It wasn't until I went to Portland State for my women's studies program and talking to other Palestinians where I learned of the occupation and the ways that Palestinians experience oppression in multiple ways. For me, being involved in disability justice organizations and reproductive justice and land back, right? Like, we can't talk about those movements without including Palestine, because Palestinians, right, are so impacted in multiple ways by Israeli forces and by oppressive policies, from having to navigate heightened militarization, checkpoints, not having their agency and autonomy respected and having their land taken away. So that's what pulled me into this, the fight for Palestinian liberation, because I feel like it's really interconnected with the other work that I do.
This is Phoenix. For me, I would say that I've heard about the occupation of Palestine for decades, and for a long time, I didn't see the connection between my experience as an American and US imperialism with what was going on around the world. And in general, for many years, I didn't see the connections between things like colonization and indigenous land rights and environmental destruction, and saw them as more isolated issues. And for whatever reason, in this most recent escalation of genocide in Palestine, things really clicked in my understanding in a different way, and shifted the way that I view intersectional issues, or really seeing the liberation of Palestine as representative of liberation of people around the world. So that got me feeling much more personally implicit and connected to Palestinian liberation. I also don't know how much I feel like I'm in the fight, right? I feel passionate about it. I don't feel like I'm risking very much personally in order to say that I'm like in the fight for liberation.
I think like Amanda, I didn't really, my consciousness wasn't raised until I was in college, and my campus had a very strong Students for Justice in Palestine group that was made up of both Palestinian International students and Palestinian Americans and allies. And they did so much education and had their own divestment campaign for our campus, which I graduated in 2009, and it was very active throughout while I was there, and still has not been successful. But they did an amazing job at educating the campus, and so I learned, like Phoenix and Amanda, how connected the struggle for Palestinian liberation is to all of our struggles. And I think what we've seen since October 7th has made it feel so much more existential when we see the violation of international human rights laws so violently. I think for me, I feel very motivated of like if we do not protect those norms for Palestinians, how can we expect those to be protected for anyone else? And so I think that just has made it, and the incredible amount of tax dollars we are sending, which we could be using to care for our own communities, and are rather using them to destroy Gaza. And yeah, so that has made it feel that much more important to get engaged and active now.
And how did you come to decide that your unions were the place to do this work? And what do, I guess, what does that look like within your union as well?
For me, Amanda, being at Centennial is one of the most diverse school districts in the state, in East County. That's something to be really proud of, and I'm honored to work there. But after October 7th happened, I think I felt that there wasn't enough being done to support Palestinians and SWANA students and families in my district. And I felt like I kept hitting a wall in trying to think of ways that our schools could support students and families. And I was a rank and file member during this time. And I remember that the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions had been putting out calls for solidarity from American unions. And so I sent that to my president, and I felt like that was a more clear pathway in showing solidarity with what the Palestinian trade unions were asking for. Because, like I mentioned, a lot of districts, not just my own, but, you know, most in the U.S., right? Like, there was a lot of silence. There was a lot of erasure. There was gaslighting about what was happening. And so, yeah, moving forward, I'm really proud because Centennial passed a resolution with the Palestinian people and BDS movement in the fall of this year, of the fall of 2024. And I think we're the sixth public school union in the country and second in the state after Parkrose to pass something like this, which includes an endorsement of a PERS divestment campaign. But I think that felt more powerful and tangible than trying to go through the district or doing something by myself.
Yeah, I'll just say, I don't think labor unions are the place. It's the place where I personally have found myself to be the most useful, but liberation work should be happening in every space and every organization.
Yeah, and I would just love to add, I went to my union because I think our labor and our tax dollars are powerful, and that is one of the best places where we can leverage the power of solidarity.
And what kind of responses have you encountered from your union siblings, and how have you responded to those who may argue that advocating for Palestinians is outside the scope of what our union should be doing?
Speaking for Centennial, I feel like some of the feedback has been pretty positive. I think there's excitement. I think for Centennial, I think the receptive has been pretty positive.
I'd like to add, I've signed up new members by talking to them about Palestine. I think it's really important, especially for younger generations of union members. Also, I think the argument that it's beyond the scope of the union is one that's very disempowering to union members. And I think when we start to talk about things like our PERS investments and our tax dollars, if we're told that we cannot talk about Palestinian liberation, we're also being told that we don't have agency over our tax dollars and our investments. And I think that's that weakens the position of unions, and we should be doing everything we can to protect our retirement funds, our tax dollars, our labor, and remove our complicity from genocide.
Great. Well, listeners, if you are just joining us, this is Labor Radio. Unlike corporate media, KBOO is commercial-free and relies on you, the listener, to function and survive as community radio. So please, if you're able, go to kboo.fm/give to make a one-time donation, or better yet, become a monthly donor. So your latest efforts involve working to get OEA to join the coalition called Oregon for Human Rights. What is this coalition advocating for? And is there a legislative concept or bill that you would that is there that advances the goals of the coalition? And then I guess it's kind of a three-part question. Do you know what kind of support there is for any sort of legislation at this point?
So the Oregon for Human Rights Coalition currently is focusing on legislative concept 2037. And this legislative concept seeks to align our state investments with our values as Oregonians to protect human and environmental rights. So one aspect of this is ESG investments, or environmental, social, and governance investing, which is a way of evaluating investments for violations of international human rights and environmental protections. So in 2020, the Oregon Treasury formalized their intention and the importance of considering ESG factors in our state investments, but it's never been implemented. So the Treasury has failed to implement that commitment. And so legislative concept 2037 would require the state to implement that value that they've already endorsed. So that would include analyzing our current and future investments based on ESG standards and make the findings of that analysis public, and to end our relationship with our investment relationship with entities that are in violation of international law. So the Oregon for Human Rights Coalition members are working to bring this legislation forward. And do you want to talk a little bit about the coalition, Laura?
Yeah, and so the coalition started with Jewish Voice for Peace and Portland DSA and KSO, Cali Kasan Solidarity Organization, I think. I hope I got that right. And there's new coalition partners signing up. There's a lot of outreach happening to faith groups and environmental organizations across the state. And it's also uniting, kind of creating a cross-issue concern. So, for example, in December of 2023, I got to go to the Oregon Treasury to talk about divesting from Elbit Systems, and I saw that there were also environmental organizations talking about divestment from fossil fuels. And so this coalition has united all of these efforts, and implementing an ESG will make it more effective for all of these organizations to unite their cause and more quickly divest from these entities that are harmful to our economy and our communities.
Great. And why do you think it's important for OEA to join the coalition and support this work?
OEA is the largest public educators union in the state. So I think it would be really powerful stance for them to join the coalition and support this work. With that being said, right, like all the public employee union members receive PERS. So this will be very impactful, but also further saying OEA in their resolutions already has something related to the public employees' retirement pension system and has language around that there should be ethical, more moral, and transparent professional standards of conduct for how the retirement money is being invested. So that's already in there in the resolution language. And so I think that them joining the coalition just really add some teeth behind that language and some action that can ideally lead to change.
Right. And you've kind of already mentioned this, but what are some of the other causes, or who are some of the other folks that maybe Palestine really isn't sort of high on their list of issues that they're particularly focused on right now? What are some other reasons that folks should support this kind of legislation and the coalition?
I think really anybody who's concerned about human rights abuses around the world, environmental degradation, war profiteering, land rights. We have hundreds of millions of dollars invested in corporations around the world that are bringing, you know, human and environmental degradation to all corners of the earth. So this legislation is much broader than it's inclusive of Palestine, because it would cease investments in entities that are pursuing genocide. So that, you know, would include Palestine, but also much broader concerns around the world.
Yeah, unfortunately, genocide isn't limited to just Gaza, right?
Exactly. And then people who are, you know, it's like it takes everybody's focus in all directions. So people that are worried about cobalt and diamond mining and child labor and, you know, all other types of protections would have a reason to care about where our state's money are invested.
So I'm the lucky one that gets to ask this question that is pretty challenging, I guess. How would you respond if a state employee argued that this kind of screening would risk them losing a chunk of their retirement? So placing their own, you know, immediate material needs above, like, sort of greater objectives of having ethical investments.
Yeah, and so OEA, because of some of the language in the resolution Amanda mentioned, OEA has already had this conversation and agreed that we need to put our ethical concerns ahead of profit margins. But regardless of that, studies show us that strong environmental social governance policies and their implementation result in better performing, same or better performing investments. So, and I think we can see this happening already, is that our economy is going to be stronger and is already moving towards green solutions and things that protect human life and our environment. So, and I think we also need to, and this is what I'm really interested in with empowering ourselves around our retirement savings, is that our investments create the economy that we're living in. So, so we are putting energy into the kinds of economic developments that we want to see. And so we need to ask ourselves, do we want to see economic developments that stand to profit off of environmental destruction and genocide? Or do we want to see economic developments that care for our communities and our environment?
That's great. And how are you working with OEA to get the OEA to join the coalition? What work have you done with them?
And so our next step is to ask the OEA board to vote to join this coalition. We're hoping that they'll do that at the next February meeting. And we are trying to generate or organize our rank and file members to show support for this vote. And there are a few ways that you can do that. So one is to sign our petition and help share it with your coworkers. Talking to your coworkers about this vote and emailing your board members and making sure they know how important it is for you that your union join the coalition.
And yeah, Laura mentioned, asking your union to join the coalition. So Centennial Education Association has voted to join and endorse Oregon for Human Rights Coalition. I plan on asking the East County Uniserve as well. And so, bringing this to your reps and bringing it to exec council for them to take a vote on it is super powerful too.
What future plans as union members do you have that's related to these efforts? Are there plans beyond the immediate legislative objectives? Do you have other plans that go beyond that?
For me, for Amanda, I know some peers, public employees for Palestine are thinking of doing a skills share, or starting to plan a skills share event for other union members who want to learn how to organize around Palestine and PERS divestment in their own locals. So you can get in touch with me for more information about that, but they'll probably be at the end of the month of February. And another group I wanted to shout out to is the Oregon Educators for Palestine. They've been doing a lot of amazing advocacy and organizing within mostly PPS, but I recommend folks also get in touch with them and follow their Instagram and see what they've been up to. They're working on some upcoming actions. In terms of for us, I know we are collecting emails for folks that want to be further involved. So kind of figuring out how can we get more people plugged in and keep this momentum going. I think that's something we're all trying to figure out and strategize on.
I don't have specific plans for, I often feel like I'm not doing, like I'm not, I don't know what to do. And I feel really grateful that this opportunity to appeal to our board to join the coalition came up in my life, because it feels like a meaningful thing to do. And I guess it's a little bit in my mind with our representative assembly coming up to, focus some thought towards that. But I think I'm sort of I'm gonna see what opportunities are before me.
Well, I want to thank you all for joining us here today and on KBOO. And thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Good morning. I'm one of the hosts on KBOO's weekday morning folk strip. My name's Will. We lost one of our best DJs in December. Diane Carl hosted Early Morning Gumbo on Tuesdays for many years. Now we need help. We need new DJs for Tuesday mornings. One of them could be you or someone you know. Think about it. Are you interested in folk music? Each show takes time and effort, but it's fun. Nothing fancy, just be yourself and tell listeners about the music you play. Imagine hearing yourself on the radio. Most of us record our programs at home, but some come to the station. No experience required. KBOO offers free training. If you're interested, please go to kboo.fm/volunteer on the internet to see what's involved. Thanks for helping.
I spend most of my time in North Carolina, but when I'm in the Pacific Northwest, I turn my dial to KABU music for the rest of us. Oh, yeah.
This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Before we get started, I want to remind you that KABU is